This is Julio Rodriguez, and this is the Lookout Landing Podcast.
Hello, operator. Can you give me number 9? Can I see you later? Can you give me back my dime? Tell me I saw later. Twisted with the dollar bill. Mailman, bring the paper. Leave it on my windowsill.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back, all of you beautiful idiots. We've tricked you yet again into tuning into our podcast. We will now take over your thoughts and feelings for the next hour, something you did not explicitly ask for, but here we are. My name is Matthew Robertson, staff writer and podcast extraordinaire at lookoutlanding.com. Today, I am joined, I think, by two of my coworkers at Lookout Landing. I can confirm that Kate Prusser is here. Kate,
hello.
What's going on with you?
Not much. Same
okay,
as always.
Great. Very cool. Very cool. John, are you here? We were worried you left.
I did leave, and I am back as a true professional. I did go get snacks to munch on in the muted moments, but rest assured, none of that will make it in to the audio experience for you, our beloved listeners.
Let's talk snacks. Let's talk snacks. What have we got for snacks?
I'm rocking some Good Thins. This is not really getting that adventurous there, but we got some gluten-free crackers, and then I got some very smelly camembert, more smelly than I expected, but pretty tasty, and I got some summer sausage, so nice array here. How about you?
A little German lumberjack, like folklore character, fairy tale character, mm-hmm. out in the Black Forest eating your snack after cutting down an enchanted tree. Good job.
Absolutely.
I have gummy peach rings. They're from Werner. Ready for everything. I don't know. I got them at the deli mart down the street from my house where they make good sandwiches, which I had to have last night because we had no power. Thanks, City Light.
Get them.
Yeah, they are the worst, honestly. So I don't know. It was like an impulse buy because I was feeling sorry for myself. So I grabbed this and I have to say, I consider myself a bit of a connoisseur of the peach rings. I love peach rings. And these are like the best I've ever had. They're from Werner Gourmet Meat Snacks in Tillamook, Oregon. I don't know if it's just like that they didn't travel very far. Like maybe they were freshly made. But man, they are. I'm having to stop myself from eating the whole bag. So,
from the peach groves of the Oregon coast, no doubt.
Well, I'm curious about their jerky because I love me some jerky. So if Werner Meat Snacks does, I'll report back on if Werner Meat Snacks does a good jerky as well.
Nice. We love a fodega. That's what I call those little corner stores where you can get a sandwich.
We love having
electricity. We hate West Seattle's power grid, I guess. Kate, do you have
sure
any idea
do.
What's going on? I'm sure we have some West Seattle listeners who are experiencing
they would have to literally be my direct neighbors because it's a very small little enclave that this is affecting. But we have some underground power lines, and I guess that they are, they've been buried for a long time and they are no longer working. And it's apparently hard to find power line breaks when they're underground. So takes a long time to solve the problem, diagnose the problem, and then solve it. So that appears to be what's going on. All I know is don't take your power for granted. Everybody reach out and give your favorite appliance a little loving tap right now. Boy, did I miss them over the past weekend.
I have a question for the group, circling back to something said earlier. What is camembert? I do not know what that is.
Sorry, I have a mouthful of peach ring.
That's okay.
I did not realize we were going to be kicking it around.
That's okay.
This is the riffing part of the pod. Everyone knows that. First 10 minutes are back and forth action.
That's okay. Are you familiar with brie?
Yes, I am.
Okay. It's it's basically brie, but it's specifically generally French, and yeah, it's just like another sort of soft cheese. It's like a little bit harder on the outside usually, but it's usually quite tasty, and this is quite tasty. It just it's got a more pungent than brie, which is usually pretty inoffensive. So I have been previously kicked out of our office for eating this camembert. So I'm eating it in a large open area in hopes that that will mitigate as many issues.
Wow. Okay. Good job. I think I would like that. I didn't know what it was. I'd never heard that word before, but I probably would enjoy eating that. Well, the only snack I know is Bitchin' Sauce, official sponsor of Lookout Landing. Thank you so much, Bitchin' Sauce. To all of our loyal commenters, you may remember me shelling out for Bitchin' Sauce in a spring training recap. I've had to retell this story many times recently when people asked how this happened. And so I went and looked at the recap, and I wrote, I'm paraphrasing a little bit, but I was like, I was not paying attention to the game. I was paying attention to Bitchin' Sauce. And so they found that and sent me a very cute tote bag. What else? Oh, a trucker hat that says, like, Bitchin'. And then several double-digit even vouchers for free Bitchin' Sauce. So that is the only snack that will be in my refrigerator for months to come.
Yeah. And this is sort of a shout-out to any business, basically really anyone who produces a product that does not overlap with our potential coverage.
Correct.
If you have a product, yeah, if you have a product that there is no potential issue in which we would have to provide coverage of you, we will very happily accept any sort of really bribery or and also, you know, if it's good.
That's right.
Werner Meat Snacks, get at me.
Yeah.
If you're the official snack of the Anaheim Angels, you can fuck right off. You want no part of your product.
Yeah, absolutely not.
Well, this is problematic because Bitchin' Sauce is based in California. I was hoping that they were like a local thing, but
well, we listen, Kate. I got my fingers in a lot of pots. All right, I know exactly what's going on.
Yeah,
my
your
man,
fingers in a lot of pots.
Yeah, he's got to test how hot the soup is.
Not what you said. That's
you guys don't
saying.
Eat. You don't eat Bitchin' Sauce like Winnie the Pooh? Just put your whole hand in the pot and scoop it out?
I will say, spurred on by this, I did go pay with money out of my own pocket to buy some Bitchin' Sauce, and I got pesto, and I have had to stop myself from just scooping it out with my hands and eating it like poo in a honey pot.
Okay. Well, that's great for you. What I was going to say is, in my communication with the Bitchin' Sauce liaison, I learned that they're Padres fans. The company's based in Carlsbad, which is right outside San Diego.
That really does fit because they're too cool. It's far too cool of a company to be Angels fans or even, let's be honest, Dodgers fans.
That's
maybe
correct.
A's fans. A's fans are pretty cool.
Well, I was going to say, just relating to Mariners California sponsorships, if I'm not mistaken, the only beer that I've seen officially sponsored like in concert with the Mariners produced, and this is probably wrong, at least going back in time to some degree, but St. Archer Brewing has a, like, actual Mariners IPA. Then
oh yeah, they have the cans, like, that you can get at Costco.
Yeah, and it's a San Diego brewery. You know, it. I'm not complaining. It's good beer. I have nothing against San Diego, but like, that is the like connection that we could, like, the Mariners are making is a San Diego, like, you couldn't find a brewery in Seattle to make a beer for the Mariners.
I feel like maybe St. Archer has, because they're at a lot of the spring training parks, so I feel like maybe
that's an
interesting
point.
Maybe they've got like a little bit of a foot. Let me tell you how much I miss drinking some Cactus League beer right now. Cactus League is where I found Cutwater Spirits, which is a canned cocktail. Oh, again, if you want to get at me, Cutwater Spirits, I will chill for you all day long because I love it. Had it at the Fall League for the first time, which they're just like cocktails in cans. They're delicious. They're super refreshing when you're like sitting at the spring training parks. But that's where I saw St. Archer for the first time, and then came up here and saw it at Costco, and Actually, they have these really cool labels on the ones. They're like tall boys, and if you peel them back, the ballpark is, like, the field is in there. It's really cool looking.
I have not seen that.
Oh, yeah. I'll drop a picture. So I just assume that they've done, like, a partnership with a bunch of the different clubs, and maybe that's where it grew from. So I'm hoping to see some Cutwater Spirits at the ballpark this year. If I go to the ballpark, which is honestly, it's a big if at this point.
Yeah, that is kind of a looming question. And it would be, like, I was having this conversation with a friend, and it was me, like, I just want to drink a beer outside at Safeco Field. Like, I might even turn into that guy who starts leaving early, like, mostly for, you know, COVID reasons. But, like, if I get one Safeco Field beer this summer, I think that will, like, scratch the itch. Even if it is St. Archer, a non-local company. The problem is, as you guys know, there's not a single craft brewery in Seattle, which is weird. You would think there would be at least one, but I haven't seen or heard of any of them.
So weird that there's not, like, I am surprised, honestly, that, like, Georgetown or something. Well, because the ballpark had Hop Valley, and they're Oregon, so I guess a little closer, but still not, you know, in the backyard. The great thing is the cask station behind home plate, where they had, like, the rotating ones and a lot of different ones came through. A lot of those were not Northwest or weren't local, but a lot of them were too. So, but I'm a little worried that that might be a victim of COVID because
I will say I have heard you can't spell baseball without BSB. So,
oh, yeah.
That doesn't live here anymore either, though. Heritage sold it. Yeah, they sold it to St. Louis, and now it's different. We actually got a couple bottles and did a side-by-side taste test. It is decidedly different now. It's a little harsher. Tastes a little more like Fireball.
Man, is that what we should expect from Nolan Arenado this year, too? Just like a little more hot-headedness?
A little more
Fireball. Look at this guy. Relevant, topical joke. Yeah.
I know, almost like we're a baseball podcast, and we should probably talk about baseball. But, I mean, talking about the ballpark experience, I think, is now that we have tickets going on sale, they went on sale to the season ticket holders first. It sounds like a lot of them got scooped up. They're going out to Mariner Mail subscribers tomorrow for pre-sale. And then kind of whatever's left of those first 11 games that they opened will be released to the regular public after that. So we'll see. Not being able to take a bag, they say that that policy is going to go away once COVID does. I wonder if the policy against outside food is going to stick around or not. I have a bad feeling it's going to.
Yeah, and, like, that is legitimately a transformational thing for me, who, like, much like Matthew, I mean, that is just what I want. I want to go be outside, be at Safeco, T-Mobile, you know, be with people I care about and an environment that I have, you know, deep personal connection to, and watch baseball. But the vast majority of the time, I will get food beforehand. I'll go to, one of the stands nearby, or I'll go, you know, even to a bar or a restaurant, or, you know, any place really, even just like along the sort of walkway into the stadium along CenturyLink or Lumen. God, they need to stop changing the names of these places, where it's vastly cheaper and it's really convenient. Like, that was one of the best things is just how convenient it was to grab food, go in, really be relatively light on things you had to bring into the park, or, you know, things you had to get at the park. You know, and you just factor in if you want to buy a couple beers, that's your expense. I am similarly worried, Kate.
Yeah, it's going to be weird. I need to definitely feel it out. I need to see the first couple games on TV and see what the vibe is.
I will say, like, I've spent all summer saying, like, oh, if only, and last summer as well, I would be so thrilled to pay $15 for a beer again. I wonder how long that feeling lasts, especially once I'm able to spend money elsewhere again. Right now I'm sitting on a pile of discretionary income, like the money that I would have normally been putting to these things that I've been doing boring things with, like paying down credit card bills and saving and, you know, responsible things. I wonder how quickly it'll get to that point where I'm like, okay, I've blown through enough fun money. Like, now it's time to start kind of watching my budget again.
Yeah, it's going to be, I mean, we're all like, it's going to be so weird to like return to a life we were already living, you know, like that's such a weird concept. Like we're going back to something we did for every summer of our life, basically, but we have to like relearn how to do it and like question if anything that we're doing is safe. Going to be very weird. Can't wait to do it with y'all.
Absolutely. I mean, there will, no matter what, be that sweet spot where we're all just so grateful to be out and in the same place and feeling safe with it, which is the most important thing, and breathing beautiful ballpark air. Like, some things will not, so much of it will be strange and different, but, you know, the purity of it, like, I can't wait to hear a bat hit a ball again. I can't wait to smell the grass again. I can't wait to feel that breeze that comes in, you know, around the seventh inning every night. I can't wait.
Can't wait to kiss the homies on the mouth. Can't wait to enjoy the delicious taste of Bitchin' Sauce, the official snack of Lookout Landing. Which I guess you can't even bring into the stadium. No, they're already mine. I'm not giving those back. Okay, let's talk about the Mariners. We should start with the news of the day, I guess. Today is Tuesday. The Mariners have announced some minor roster moves. Six players were reassigned to minor league camp. I think the most surprising is definitely Matt McGill, a guy who had been part of the major league bullpen for two seasons now, and I guess no room for the goose anymore. He has been sent to minor league camp along with Robert Duggar, Sam Travis, Luis Liberato, Dylan Thomas, and Jack Reinheimer. Is this anything? Is there anything that we should like note here? This is all pretty standard stuff. I think we could have expected all of it, minus maybe the McGill thing, but even he like was definitely getting squeezed out with all these new exciting relievers coming in.
Yeah, I think McGill has been working through some health stuff, and you know, the Mariners were able to get him back on a minor league deal last right at the end of the last season. Just like they were a couple other guys, including Gerson Bautista, who they recently released. So that Tacoma, Arkansas bullpen eventually is going to be packed. But, you know, they're going to need a lot of innings because they're going to have a lot of young pitchers who just aren't going to be able to go 5, 6, 7 innings right out the gate. So, nothing super surprising to me. And, you know, all guys off of the 40-man roster really sort of locks in the bullpen at the big league level even more, down to maybe 2 or 3 people battling for a spot. But yeah, I think this all makes sense.
Kate, do you want to weigh in on the great Matt McGill saga? Any parting thoughts for our guy?
No, I was just sitting here pondering Gerson Bautista, who I feel really bad about because his arm must be borked, right? Like, I thought he came back and looked good a couple times, and I really thought he was going to put it together. I believed this was going to be the year of Gerson, but
yeah,
negative.
I was talking about this a little bit, but like 2 years ago, Gerson Bautista was, I think, a top 20, maybe a top 15 prospect in the Mariners system.
Yeah,
and,
he was.
You know, and part of that is like
more like 20 than 15, but still.
Sure. But like, you know, he's a guy who threw 100 and maybe could throw a slider. But like, the system is so much better. There's a lot of depth, and it's a shame for him personally, but it is good for the Mariners generally that Gerson Bautista not working out very well is okay.
Yes, it's a moderate ding. Does not impact the trade at all.
I don't know. I was ready to call it. Mets won the trade.
You were. Matt McGill, I'm not totally surprised by because he is on a minor league deal. I'm a little surprised they were able to get him on a minor league deal after he was effective, but he was hurt. And that, like, he was pretty good in 2019 and then just had the injury. So it was a really good year to get relievers, especially on just bargain discount deals. So I bet we see McGill at some point. He's still working back. You know, Drew Steckenrider is another one who is going to be in that Tacoma bullpen, another guy who's working back, who I have kind of high hopes for. There's going to be some serviceable depth there, and that's what we're starting to see, is them separate out, like, who the Tacoma Rainiers team is going to be for your watching pleasure in 2021, because I think Cheney's going to open up too, so really excited about that.
Yeah, I think that probably ends our Matt McGill session. Matt, we hope to see you soon.
It's a lot more Matt McGill than you get anywhere else.
That's true. Yeah, this is your one-stop shop for Matt McGill, brought to you by, you guessed it, Bitchin' Sauce. Okay, we convened today to do a cute little spring training check-in. We're on the back half of spring training now. And my first question for the group, I think y'all have been more checked in, especially Kate. Kate, we thank you for all of your spring training recaps, especially for those day games. But my question was, how are you consuming these games since Root Sports refuses to televise most of them? Have you paid an informant? Do you have an informant on the ground in Arizona? Are you just madly refreshing Twitter? Or maybe you've just reverted to listening on the radio like it's 1948. Which one is it?
All listening on the radio, for sure listening on the radio, because at least listening on the radio, you can hear the sound of the ball and the bat. So, like, you know, when something is smoked, it sounds like it over the radio, even though, like, the announcers are a little bit back in their announcer book, and it's always a challenge at spring training to say whether a ball is going out or not because the conditions are so weird. But yeah, it's basically been a combination of that and just listening to the games. You pick up a lot. And actually, I usually run two feeds at once. I run, this is true, like, chaos monster energy, but I run one feed that's the Mariners, and then I run the opposing broadcaster's feed, like, on a different device set a little bit away so that my ears can separate the two streams. And then I just try to pick up whatever info I can. I know! That's the kind of service journalism you get from Lookout Landing. It would be so nice if the Mariners would credential us to be on those Zoom calls, and maybe I would not have to work quite so hard, but about that,
I'm
as
the
you
only
are.
Person who's allowed to work hard.
You're the only person. Only I may work hard.
I have a real question, though, Kate. When you listen to the other team's stream of these spring training games, what is their general, like, approach to the Mariners? Do they know who any of the players are? Are they, like, doing the, like, faux, like, oh, you know, a lot of exciting stuff in the Seattle system? Like, do they seem to know what they're talking about, or is it all just lip service?
Well, I'm pretty sure that Rob Manfred stands behind them with a loaded gun, and if they do not say in the first 5 minutes of a spring training broadcast, the Mariners have the longest drought in professional sport, if they don't say that, they just get, you know, put on the bone pile. So they make sure to get that out right off the top. And then once we've covered that, yes, generally it is talking about how the Mariners are on the upswing with their system. There's usually some, I think, fairly informed discussion about Jared Kelnick and Julio Rodriguez, and mostly just, like, who they are as players. Not really, I haven't heard anyone really dig down into, like, the Kevin Mather comments, which has been surprising to me, or the Kelnick service time issue. I guess maybe this is a little more nitty gritty than they want to get on their spring training broadcasts. But yeah, that's about what they cover. Some are definitely more informative than others. It's a real appreciation tour, let me tell you, of our own radio broadcast team. But you know, a lot of it is just the same stuff you'd find on our own broadcast as well. Like, there's always some food discussion, always by, like, the third inning, somebody's talking about food in some way or another. But yeah, I would say, like, they've all got the same little media guides in front of them. So yeah, a lot of them are reading the same things, but you can kind of tell which broadcasts are a little more dialed into like the minors because they have more interesting things to say. Specifically, you can tell who has been kind of following the ascent of Kelnick and Rodriguez. So it's always interesting. Know thy enemy is what I say.
Yeah, that is encouraging.
My enemy is C.G. Nikowski on the Rangers broadcast. Oh, terrible.
Oh God. Kate is violently ill because of the Texas Rangers.
My God. Well, I mean, who isn't really? Have you seen the stadium?
Got him again.
But no, it's today he was just like grilling. He was just playing trivia with what count were the most home runs hit in last year in baseball?
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
You're not a trivia gal. You want straight play by play.
I mean, I like to learn, but this was more like he was like, I have the answer and you don't, and like lording it over them sort of. I don't know. He made fun of one of the women reporters for answering. She said like 0-0-0 or something, which was the right answer. And he was like, 0-0. Who calls it 0-0? It's like, oh my God, you're just grown up Trevor Bauer. Gross.
Oh my God, Kate, are you doing segues now? That was the next thing I wanted to talk about. Just absolutely cracking Trevor Bauer's shit. So great.
Can we take a minute to appreciate John's... Oh, can we take a minute, though, to appreciate John's headline?
Oh, yeah. John, do some bragging real quick.
I love writing a headline. What can I say?
This headline got so much attention on Twitter.
I believe I said... what was it? It was Mariners take trip to artisanal tater shop.
Shoppe.
Leave triple decker to tab for Trevor Bauer. It was good. I'm glad that people enjoyed it. It was enjoyable to watch. I mean,
people love hating on Trevor Bauer. I did not realize. Oh yeah, they do. I don't generally do a lot of it because I like to just kind of ignore Trevor Bauer because again, he's like a child. He wants attention.
I was gonna say he would find you also and just harass you on Twitter.
Yeah,
relentlessly.
No, I have no desire to be it on Twitter either. Yeah. So yeah, I pretty much avoid that. But yeah, it turns out if you like throw any amount of shade at him, people just eat it up like ice cream.
I think this winter that really sort of accentuated because of the sort of Mets flirtation, followed by sort of spurning, so to speak. There were a lot of people who didn't want Trevor Bauer to go to the Mets that were Mets fans. There were a lot of people who did want Trevor Bauer to go to the Mets and were Mets fans. And the people, they all now are very united in fury. And, you know, usually New York sports fans are very sort of subdued. But, you know, something specifically about this person seems to have brought them out of their shell.
I'm sorry, did you describe New York sports fans as subdued? I can't figure out if you're being sarcastic or not.
As my father often said to me, I am being facetious. I'm not being ironic. So, yes, no, I have never met a more forcibly just furious group of people than the New York sporting community.
We had one on the podcast. We actually had him twice. He was a great guest. We should get him back.
Oh my God. I thought you were referencing Bradford. I was like, yeah, Bradford's great. Bradford's like relatively quite mellow. But yeah, New York guy.
Oh no.
Did New York guy come on? I forgot. Did New York guy and Bradford get a chance to chat?
No, they did not. They were ships in the night, unfortunately.
All right, next time.
New York has been going through a lot. I haven't talked to him in a while, but I would imagine he probably has had a tough year.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely.
I think there are a lot of people, like when you do something like win the Cy Young, it does kind of put a target on your back a little bit, I think, especially when you win it in the way where Bauer did, where he was basically like, I'm better than all of them.
Right. Well,
and that is a bold claim when Jacob deGrom exists.
Yeah. Well, and it was also like both the Cy Youngs last year were from the Central divisions, and it was kind of like, I mean, yeah, I fully believe Shane Bieber is amazing, but also like, when you play most of your games against the Royals, Tigers, and
Pittsburgh too. You know, Pittsburgh is in
like
there.
You, like you get to play the Pirates. You get to play. Yeah, they. Play, I mean, really, it, like of all of the NL Central.
Yeah, the garbagiest of garbage barges.
Right, like it, you know, it literally was just the two.
Pirates, love you, Pirates.
Yeah, like the you know, it is not a shock that. The two dudes with very good curveballs got very good numbers against, you know, Gregory Polanco. But, yeah, sorry to Gregory.
He can handle it. But yeah, that was, I mean, Bauer's brash and swaggery and, you know, he's a big personality. He's built himself into being a big personality. And I think he's done so with the expectation that, like, some people are going to love him for it and some people are going to hate him for it. And
absolutely.
He embraces that.
Yeah.
And so I don't like to wander into those very congested waters of Twitter.
Right.
But it was, I will totally admit, I asked for this in the Slack. I wanted Evan White to hit a home run off Trevor Bauer. I was like, universe, I've had 3 days without power. Like, my hair smells bad. Like, please give me this. And it did. I was so happy.
I think it was one of the thing about Bauer, and there are a million things, but like,
there are so
he
many
is, the way I try to go about it, because I do, like, I wish there were more people who were exclusively on the field the way that he is, in terms of like,
I mean, like very the shit where he's like, I'm gonna pitch with one eye closed.
Sure,
I don't like that. I don't like. No, I don't.
Well, but here's the thing.
I don't like that.
I can't separate that from the fact that it's him, that well, because it is like, it's hard to sort of.
I think it's disrespectful. I think it's disrespectful to your opponent. Yeah. You like that?
I like that there is
that's
someone.
That's so gross, John.
Well, here's the thing. Like, I like that there's someone in baseball, in Major League Baseball, who is like that. Because I really enjoy rooting against someone who is outright very, like someone who is, you know, like you want sort of obvious.
It's
villain
like,
type people.
It's
yeah,
like
heel.
It's
thank
like
you, heel.
Yeah, it's like Terrence Owens, right? Is that his name?
Terrell Owens.
Terrell Owens.
Terrell Owens. Yes.
Terrell Owens.
Terrell? 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 Anyway.
You know, it's been a long time.
T.O. It has been a long time.
I only knew him as T.O. I was living in Philly at the time, and I was coached into hating him. And I was like, well, here's a person with a perfectly hateable persona. It felt good.
Absolutely. Exactly.
It felt good to hate him. I don't know anything about him, but I was like, you guys hate it? I hate him. So yes, I will agree with you. Like a big polarizing figure like that is probably a good thing for baseball. But
that,
I don't have to like it.
Right. I
agree with John. I wish it was a different personality, but I like baseball. Like we've said it for many, many years. Baseball needs more personalities, but it sucks that one of the biggest ones is Trevor Bauer.
It can't. I mean, that's a reflection on what's wrong with the sport, though, right? Is like it has to be, because every time it's like a Latin guy, Tatis is like, well, he's got to respect the game, you know.
Right,
you can't be swinging in a 3-0 count, whatever, hitting a grand slam when you're not supposed to hit a grand. Yeah, so I mean, for the game does everything it can to tamp down the personalities of people who aren't Trevor Bauer. So I'm not sure I can get on board with him taking advantage of the fact that, like, just because of who he is, he could be that person.
Well,
in baseball.
I think that's absolutely fair, and part of where I'm, you know, coming from is like the players that I really grew up hating and rooting for. It felt like there was at least a little more beyond, like, oh, this person statistically is excellent. That part is great. And I absolutely love that, and I love the statistical part of the game, but, like, you know, Ken Griffey Jr. had a personality to match his skills. And, you know, Edgar had a personality to match his skills. And, like, A-Rod had a personality, you know, that was, to me, ultimately quite off-putting, but also made him a fabulous person to root against. Like, Roger Clemens, obviously, oh, yeah. Off-field stuff as well. But, like, Roger Clemens was...
hateable.
Yeah, like, Roger Clemens... looked like such a dick and was impossible to hit, you know, like, and like played for the worst, you know, played for the teams I was rooting against. Right. Like even Randy Johnson, who like generally was like, all like, right. So looked who mean,
you know, who can like, we propose as a heel then who's not Trevor Bauer? Because I don't like that. Oh. He's taken. I mean,
I think I can be of some assistance now. Here.
Well, I was going to say the best sort of heel, and I don't mean to cut you off, Matthew, because you do have a good addition, but like Justin Verlander has been one of the better heels.
That's a good one.
He is a reasonably subdued one where it's like he's like done dickish things and like has sort of an imperiousness in the way that he acts and is also impossibly good and keeps being impossibly good and like he's had TJ but like I have like reasonably low doubts that he's gonna come back and just like I throw 97 again, of course I do, I'm Justin Verlander, I'm fueled by your hatred, like
he eats your hate like love, he eats your hate like protein powder,
he eats your hate like Mark Canna at a sushi bar.
Oh,
that's my heel. Verlander is much better though because he's much more national. People actually know who he is.
Right.
If I leave any legacy, I want it to be having a national audience hate Mark Canna. Because he sucks.
It is your platform.
Thank you so much. He's the worst. If you want a guy to hate who's not like actually problematic in the way that Bauer is, welcome to the Mark Canna hate factory.
All right.
It's a never-ending shift. You can never leave.
Can I suggest one? I want to suggest one.
Yes, go for it.
Please.
I think that the next good heel is going to be Jared Kelnick.
I think it's very plausible.
I think in a different way. Like, Jared loves the fans, and he will never be a heel to any particular fan base, I think. First of all, because I think he understands the purpose of baseball is to entertain people. Secondly, because... he's smart and he knows he's going to need to sign a big contract after this and it probably won't be in Seattle at this point. Sad. But I think that there is a way that Jared could, because there's that burgeoning thing with ownership. Mm-hmm. I think Jared could be like the face of the player heel, like people against owners, and that I'm very here for.
Yes. I absolutely 155%.
Jared Kelnick, yes. Labor leader.
Yes.
The next CBA negotiations.
Yes.
Absolutely.
But
I also feel like he's very much a guy that if he was on another team, I'd be like, I hate him.
I will say, I mean, there are a couple semi-heels, but I think that their heelness is not quite as fun because it's for it's not as like sort of I'm getting at Manny Machado and Bryce Harper are sort of the like heels, but like it's not fully satisfying because I think they are heels for less good reasons. And I think Harper has the attitude similar to how Kelnick kind of could have the attitude to be an easy sort of person to dislike if you're on another team. But yeah, I do think Kelnick has the shot to sort of get in there. And I'm pretty stoked about that possibility of I've never really rooted for that player. And I'm so excited to see him, you know.
I'm excited to see, like, Marco and Kelnick team up because Marco flies under the radar because he plays for the Mariners and because he's Marco Gonzalez. But, like, he has made some spicy comments in the past, like the ones about the Blue Jays coming in, you know, taking a poo on the dining room table, whatever. I mean, he came out after the Red Sox and, you know, intimated that they were cheating. Like, Marco is absolutely fiery. And I think, like, maybe Marco and Kelnick, where they're just together, like, feeling emboldened to just speak their minds, they're just going to piss off other... If the Mariners are nationally relevant, knocking wood, they're just going to piss people off by being who they are. Whereas I think Trevor Bauer is a calculated act to piss people off.
Yes.
I think it's just natural with Marco and Kelnick, and it's going to come out, and it's going to be... And then maybe, like, throw a little Keenan Middleton into the mix, too. Because he definitely is a little brash and a little swagger. Like, we could definitely make some enemies, and that's what I want to see.
Absolutely. Little Big League, too. Little Big League, too.
Oh, Electric Boogaloo. John, what you were saying about, like, never having been able to root for this player, I was kind of racking my brain for someone. And the only one I can really think of is Richard Sherman, because he had that thing where he was he's kind of a dick, but also, like, he's making a lot of good points, you know?
Yes.
Like, it was hard. Kind of like with Kelnick and the labor stuff. You're like, okay, like, yeah, you're very outspoken and saying stuff that I'm sure your own organization doesn't want you to say, but you're not wrong. And, like, that's exactly what Richard Sherman was.
Yeah.
That's very fair. I think that's a good point. I do want to throw out a comp real quick before we move on to, and I hate to do this, but it occurs to me that the Marco Gonzalez sort of fiery, kind of a, not like beloved by his teammates, but like, you know, really can get under the skin of people. I do wonder if he's maybe going to be like the Mariners' Jared Weaver, of just like, like, you don't really like Jared Weaver was not like ever really a star. You know, he had some star-ish caliber seasons, but like mainly he just pitched a ton and like was good. And I do wonder, like, that I think could be fun. If the Mariners are good, then you get to know that player, right? Like, he's the type of guy that you don't know if the team's bad, but once the team's good, you're seeing him more people are talking to him. He has more to say. I look forward to that hopefully being the case.
And I did hate Jared Weaver. That's a good example.
Oh, God, yeah. Oh, God, yeah.
The divisional guys, like, I want Jared Kelnick to become to the rest of the AL West what like Jared Weaver or Ian Kinsler or Mark Canna is to the Mariners right now.
Well, doesn't Marco already has some like wild numbers against the Angels, if I'm not mistaken. I remember this vaguely from, I think this is a thing. I think he has really dominated the Angels.
He had one really good start against them last year. I remember that in Anaheim. That was the complete game where he just was dominant, really.
Yeah, he has yielded a 663 OPS against the Angels. Yeah, they have done absolutely nothing. They got a 79 OPS plus, and he has a 3.55 ERA and is 8-1 against them in 15 starts.
Wow.
I mean,
so,
also,
pretty good so far.
The Angels have really sucked for the last few
years.
That's true,
but the Angels and the Mariners have been at best 50-50, right? Like, you know.
Yeah.
And
I was going to say, wait till you find out who also sucks.
It was a thing for a while.
You know who I'm excited to potentially be our next Angel killer because he's been groomed for it so far is Logan Gilbert. Because he's made 2 spring training starts, both against the Angels. Both have featured like some pretty high-powered lineups against them, and he's looked awesome both times. So from that limited sample, I've decided that Logan Gilbert is going to be our staff ace against the Angels. So we'll be ready to take that mantle on.
Yeah. Logan Gilbert, if you're listening, please direct all of... Because I don't think he's really that angry. He seems very level-headed, but I want him to save all of his anger for the Angels.
I have talked to Logan Gilbert. He's not... He's declined podcast. He does not like podcasting, which is, let's face it, smart. But he...
Could not be me.
He's... He is, like, to all appearances, kind of mild-mannered, but there's very much a steel core in the heart of Logan Gilbert, and he...
Whoa.
Oh, yeah. He's like, a deep-seated, angry, like, not going to show it right off the bat, but is going to go home and, like, etch some stuff into his wall kind of anger. You know, it's like a slow-burn anger, and then it's
just
gonna blow
I know those guys.
Yeah, he's that guy. Like, he's not going to show it externally, but he's going to go home and plot. He's a plotter. Because he is still an uber. I mean, they're all competitive guys. And, you know, he comes off as like, oh, I'm just a nice guy with my kind of Tyler Glasnow flow and my, like, you know, genuine, like, generally kind of nice-looking face and mild manner. But, yeah, do not underestimate Logan Gilbert.
Roger that. Okay, let's go to our listener questions.
Yes, please.
As always, thank you to everyone who sent questions on Twitter. If you're not on Twitter, you can always email me. That happened once, and I was actually very surprised and grateful that someone cared about this podcast enough to find my email and send me a question. But if you're not on Twitter, you can always go that route. These questions, though, are just from Twitter, and there's a lot of stuff that will allow us to kind of talk about the Mariners on field again as we kind of got away from that in this episode. But one person we have not talked about yet is the hitting machine, Ty France. And a question from Mark Igra. Sorry if I got your last name wrong, Mark. They said, Ty France has hit everywhere he has been. So did Daniel Vogelbach. But nobody seems the least bit worried about Ty. What makes him different? And this is a good question because I cannot claim to be an expert on Ty France. I can look at his numbers and say that in 2019, he hit .399 at AAA, which is very good, better than most people hit anywhere. But I don't really, like, as far as what makes him different than Vogelbach, I would say he's a different, like, he profiles as a much different hitter. But the question that Mark seems to be hinting at is, like, what about Ty France will allow him to not fall into the Mariners trap of, like, oh, a lot of hype and then sort of falling short of expectations?
The challenge with Ty France, really, is that his best years have come with very high batting average on ball and play, and he is pretty slow. He's a well below average runner, so he's not like D. Gordon, where you would expect a high batting average on ball and balls in play just because he's going to beat out infield singles more often than not. The good thing is he hits a ton of line drives. He has pretty consistently hit a ton of line drives. He did that in the minors to varying degrees. Last year, he hit at a 30% rate, which is probably higher than you can expect. But when you hit line drives, those just, they turn into hits more often than not. Like, it's just such a good bet that you're going to get on base. So, you know, he's strong. He's got pretty good pitch selection. He's never been a guy who struck out that much. I mean, there's honestly, as long as, and he has power, so, and as long as he is able to continue avoiding strikeouts, his contact has always been good, and he has not looked overmatched by big league pitching. So I think there's every reason to think he would be one of the team's better hitters, and not necessarily obviously this good this spring, but there's a lot to like. There's a lot to trust.
Yeah, I'm looking at their numbers because I was really hoping that I was going to be able to pull out, like, oh, well, Ty France had a much higher on-base percentage and he struck out less, and I can't do that because Vogelbach's numbers are so good from his minor league career. He really did just crush it. But I will say from watching Vogelbach take a ton of at-bats, and just, I mean, I haven't seen Ty France take a ton of at-bats. I've obviously seen what he's done since becoming a Mariner, and I remember him a little bit from his time in the Padres organization just because he happened to play at a lot of the levels where the Mariners face the Padres. Like, they play the Padres in high A, in double A, and in triple A. So we see a lot of the Padres, in addition to just sharing the spring training facilities and all of that. So we see a lot of them. I think that just from watching Ty France take at bats, he has a very different approach. Vogelbach is always looking to do damage. France is always looking to get a hit somehow. And in that way, he honestly reminds me more of, like, Edgar, insofar as he's not looking for his pitch, he's looking for a pitch that he can do damage on, and he calculates what that damage will be. It's not always over the fence, but sometimes it's just like dunking in a single. I would have to look at this, but I would guess that he's not as affected by the shift. I would guess that he hits to more areas of the field. Just from, again, like, watching his approach. I've seen him take ugly swings a lot less. Again, we're looking at, like, a very limited sample size in what we've seen of France as a Mariner. But I mean, he goes up. He reminds me more of Seth Smith than he does of Vogelbach, if that makes sense.
Well, For sure.
I was going to say, to add on to that, I think less than Vogelbach because, yeah, Vogelbach had the most insane walk rates, and it largely yes. came because he was very strong and he never swung. Like, that's not Ty France. Ty France is going to be more close, hopefully, to what you hoped Ryan Healy would be in terms of doesn't walk a crazy amount, walks an acceptable amount, doesn't strike out too much, especially for kind of a guy who can slug, but makes a ton of contact. It's good contact, and it finds the grass a lot.
I would say, honestly, what I thought differed from Vogelbach in the minors to Vogelbach in the majors was somebody, I think, told Vogelbach that he was going to have to hit for power or else. And so he started just absolutely just waiting on every pitch until he found that pitch, the perfect pitch. It felt like he was always seeking the perfect pitch, which, you know, pitchers being smart eventually stopped giving him, whereas Ty France is more able to do something good with any pitch.
Yeah, and the projection systems are really high on Ty France. We got a question about projections from Nick Fielden, where he mentioned that they all seem to love Ty France, but then Nick also asked, who do you think is most likely to exceed their projections this year? The Mariners, I feel like the Mariners have a lot of candidates for this because, A, like Nick mentioned, the systems are
very
down
low
on pretty much every Mariner.
Every Mariner.
But also, like, the Mariners have, like, talent. Like, that seems to be, you know, everyone is, it's become like a running joke now. Like, oh, the Mariners, they have so much young talent. You know, like, oh, well, it's got to see it to believe it. But, like, there are enough guys on this roster just where just statistically, like, one of them will have a good year. You know what I mean? Like, they have so many guys that you would think at least one of them will be pretty good. I think just based on those exit velocity numbers that Evan White, like, he was getting so unlucky last year that you got to think that he'll be at least a little bit better than last year. Like, once he figured out the swing and miss stuff, and there's still a lot of that with him, obviously, but, like, he hits the ball just so goddamn hard that you got to think that eventually those balls are going to start going for hits. So he's my choice for someone who I think will be better than the consensus seems to believe he will be.
I mean, the consensus is so low on him that it would not be hard to be better. I think that that's a... I'm surprised that that was going to be your pick because I think that that's a spicier pick than I expected. I think there are a lot safer ones. I'm not unhappy that you made that pick. I'm actually thrilled. But one thing I will say,
a lot of it too, sorry, a lot of it is just like eye test stuff for me too, which I know is like the exact opposite of what we're supposed to do here. But like when I watch Evan White hit, I think that guy looks like a solid big league hitter, even if he does have a lot of that swing and miss stuff. Like when he makes contact, it's, yeah, let's go.
Let's
what do you got for me?
A little bit about what the numbers are, because the numbers are backing up your eye test. Because I would say, like, my eye test was, wow, I think Evan White is having more productive at-bats than he was having last year, which is not hard because there were some of them that were absolutely hideous. But at the time that I looked it up, the numbers were very close. Now he has, in 2020, he had 24 at-bats in spring training. This year he has 37 so far. He's played in 15 games versus 9. He has 7 strikeouts. So he had 7 strikeouts in 24 at-bats last year. He has 7 in 37 so far this year. So I think that's pretty good.
Hell yeah.
Continues, right? Like,
basically,
that.
I'm a genius.
He's definitely making contact more, and it's something that I really started noting. I actually had a little Evan White strikeout tracker going for a while where I was tracking, like, when his outs were, what kind of outs he was making. And he was making a lot of outs where he did make contact, and it was hard contact, but, like, you know, he had one just in the game last night where it was, like, a hot shot liner that got gloved by the third baseman with the Dodgers with their insanely good, like, infield positioning. Or he had, like, a bunch where he hit it all the way to the warning track, and, like, it was scalded, but just
yeah,
didn't quite
that white the White Sox game. Yeah, he had two of those in the White Sox game.
Yes,
Divish said on Twitter that one of them was 111 miles an hour.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little bit of that case of getting lucky, not getting... Anyway, just as long as he goes up and he's not going empty at plate appearances, and I feel like that is very much what we're seeing. He's also got 14 RBIs this year as opposed to 3 last year, which I wouldn't normally look at, but it's such a big discrepancy in numbers. I kind of wonder where it's coming from. John, any ideas?
Well, yeah, I think part of that too. I think a lot of that too with RBI, like, I think a lot of that has to be mental, right? Like, him knowing, okay, I have a chance to do stuff here. Like, if you're more confident in your ability to hit, then those RBI will follow. Whereas last year, if he's like, oh, I'm kind of lost up here, and, like, there's runners out there, that could, like, work against you. Like, oh, God, now I'm nervous. But it seems like he's a little more, like, I feel like Evan White at this point, winning the Gold Glove probably helped too, which is weird because that's a defensive thing and we're talking about hitting. But I think he has the, like, I belong here thing now, which is huge for someone who, A, is still a very young player, and B, struggled so hard right when he came up.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't, even though it's a defensive thing, I mean, it's, you are the most valuable defender at your position. Like, I think that that's huge. And I have definitely spoken to players and heard from them, like, it's hard. It's hard. Sometimes you go empty at the plate, and you have to be able to hang your hat on something else that you've done to bring value to the baseball team. And that's why it's important to be well-rounded, and it's important to be able to steal bases when you get a chance to steal a base. It's important to be able to take your walks. And it's important to play good defense, because then you still know that you're making a contribution. And, you know, Evan White is super mature. Like, he's very level-headed and all that. But you could see times last year where it got to him. Where this is not a dude who shows a ton of emotion. I've been watching him through the minors for years. He's not a guy who gets really worked up about stuff. There was exactly one episode in Arkansas where I remember where he got called out on a terrible, terrible call, and he got tossed for it. It is his lone career ejection. You know, he's absolutely even keel. So, but you could see frustration. I mean, we have stills of pictures of him, like, screaming into his helmet in frustration. So you can't. It's hard to quantify the mental side, but you can't underestimate that in what was going on with him. So I definitely feel like I've seen better at-bats. It seems like you feel like you've seen that, and the numbers are bearing it out.
Beautiful. We love being validated.
Yeah, I would like to say,
my favorite thing.
My choice for someone who I think is going to overperform expectations, and I can't figure out why people are so low on him, is Kyle Lewis. And we can talk a little bit about your piece and, like, the regression aspect of Rookie of the Year candidate, whatever. But I think Kyle Lewis is somebody who has been tagged as, like, he's a slugger and he's a high strikeout guy. Like, I don't think enough credit is being given to Kyle Lewis takes really good at-bats. Like, he can take his walks and he can just hit the ball for a single when that's what needs to happen, and he did that a ton last year, and that was what really carried his value when he wasn't hitting the ball over the fence. So he's my choice. I am higher on Kyle Lewis than projection systems are. We have a whole series on this on the site, you can look it up. Like, I'm higher on Mitch Haniger than projection systems show. There are a bunch of them, but I think that if I was gonna pick an easy win, if I was betting money on it, I would take Mitch Haniger first, and I would take Kyle Lewis second.
Okay. Well, you only get one, and I'm picking Mitch Haniger, apologize. But you said Kyle Lewis first. Yeah, I mean, Haniger, it's an extremely easy, well, mostly easy win, with the caveat
it's definitely easy. It's easy money on Haniger, right? Can we all agree that it is Hanover now, is the easiest money there is?
I think so. When that's just because
I would, yeah, we've I seen would say him. So. I mean, last time there was a full season, he was an all-star,
right? Like, and even when he was like in 2019, he was like on a bad year, which was like a three-win pace.
Yeah, no, I got my years mixed up. I meant last time he played a full season. Yeah.
But you know, there was absolutely reason to think like, is he actually fully healthy? Like, what's he? How rusty is he gonna look from not playing for a year and a half? And like, you know, it's still early. Pitchers aren't, you know, fully doing sequencing and whatnot, but certainly can handle, you know, Trevor Bauer breaking ball off the plate. Like, can handle some, you know, mid-90s fastballs. So the easy, the quote-unquote easy stuff, he's been checking off. So yeah, I'm stoked about Mitch.
Both of them have looked great too. Lewis and Haniger this spring have both been like, it doesn't look like Mitch was ever like hurt, you know, like he looks totally normal. And Kyle Lewis, like you were saying, Kate, his at-bats have just been a treat. Like, he's not trying to do too much, which in spring training, like, if there's ever a time to just try to hit the ball 500 feet, it's spring training. But he's like, he's taking those at bats, like working walks. And you mentioned my piece. The only thing I'll say is, like, I would expect his home run rate to come down. Obviously, it's a longer season, so he might hit more total home runs than he did last year. But the one thing I noticed that really jumped out was his home run to fly ball ratio was insane. Like, there's no way he can keep that up. It was like up. When he first came up in September 2019, he was hitting a home run every day. It was 40%, and then that came down to like 25%, I think, last year, and that's still pretty high above the league average. So I would expect that to come down. But I think, as we've seen and as you mentioned, like, he'll hit singles. Like, he can still – his batting average may very well go up, but I think his home runs and his slugging percentage are probably the one thing or two things, I guess, that would regress.
Counterpoint, the universe owes Kyle Lewis a bunch of home runs from his time playing in Arkansas, so –
Another great point from Kate Bruiser.
Extremely.
All right, let's end with this. I'm going to combine two questions. We had a lot of people wondering about the left field situation, which is like a very obvious thing the Mariners are like still working on. Stay Puffed McFly asked, does Fraley make the roster? And then Brian at A Player to Be Named Later mentioned that Fraley has had his difficulties. And Kelenic hasn't seen the field as much due to injuries. But Brian says, I think one of them needs to be on the opening day roster. No one mentioned Trammell by name, but he's definitely in this conversation as well. So the question, I guess, let's start with the Stay Puffed McFly one. Do we think Jake Fraley makes the opening day roster, yes or no?
He's definitely trending in the right direction lately. It's almost like he's started hitting. I think he has to, like, continue on with that. But I think he benefits from them wanting to give it to him. Like, they want to put him in that. But they want to send Trammell and Kelenic to the minors. They would prefer if Jake Fraley outplay the both of them, which, by virtue of being healthy, I guess you can kind of argue he's done that over Kelenic, even though I think, very obviously, Kelenic has been the better player every time he's come to the plate.
Yes.
But, you know, if you're looking for definitely not service time reasons, then you could maybe say, like, okay, Fraley's been healthy, Kelenic hasn't, he's had more reps. Trammell, I feel like, has kind of fallen off a little after being very hot, being, like, the sensation of camp. He's kind of fallen off a little. He's had some outfield misadventures. I still think he's a better option, but I could see them service timing their way into sending him to AAA and putting Fraley on the opening day roster.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. I think if it was up to us, I would want Trammell out there on opening day instead of Jake Fraley.
Got
but 100%. For the Mariners, like, as an organization, it makes a much more Mariners sense for them to start with
Fraley. Ideally,
and then if that doesn't work,
ideally,
then you call
Trammell. They would like to do too is, I think, trade Fraley. I think they've probably been looking at trying to trade him for a while because they just don't need him. But he has not been healthy and he has not been good. And right now, I don't think he would return anything that is probably commensurate with what his actual skill value is, which is definitely higher. We've seen flashes of it. We've seen him at Tacoma, just dominate. Like, he's been good. And he will be that again, but they need him to get to that level, and then they need to trade him.
Yeah, and it's sort of that catch-22 thing also. Like, you need him to be good, but he's also not playing very... Like, if he's not playing very much, there's no way for him to get good. So you're right. If you want to trade him, you have to give him, like, at least, like, a month of playing time just so he can have the chance to prove that he's worth something in a trade.
Yeah, that it is the challenge. And I think, you know, especially for Fraley, like, he has simply not been playing for basically a year himself. Like, he got hurt last year, missed most of the season, looked bad last year. Like, he wasn't dominant in AAA when they promoted him after absolutely clobbering, you know, AA. And, like, he's getting old enough that, like, he's got to do it now. Like, last year was pretty much now or never, and then it was short enough that everyone kind of got a do-over. But, like, I don't feel exactly sort of cheated out of Trammell, because I do think, like, Trammell has had multiple cracks at AA and hasn't been great. He looks, I would say, equal to Fraley and maybe even better. And I'm certainly more interested in Trammell than Fraley, but, you know, he's 23 already. Like, there's not so much service time manipulation, I think, involved in him. Only because at a certain point, like, you're getting into, like, guys' 30s, and it only does so much. But I would rather still see Kelnick in terms of, one, I think he's the best player. The best player the organization has. And two,
wait, I'm sorry, the organization has?
For the spot. Okay. Like... I don't think he's necessarily.
I knew what you meant.
Yeah. He's the best option they have. But I do think, you know, if given the option right now, I am willing to say you can potentially. I don't think the odds are that high, Taylor, or that Jake Fraley plays well enough in a month or two to really solidify himself as a guy and get the trade. At this point, I think you'd have to play him for a whole year and have him be good. I just don't know how a team buys in that enough that you would, like, trade him and be like, oh, this is great, while you're just not playing Taylor Trammell for a month or two.
Yeah.
And you're not playing Jared Kelnick for an extra month or two.
I think, too, like, I'm okay with leaving Trammell in the minors for a little bit so he gets to absorb more of the Mariners coaching, because he's not been a Mariner for very long. So he has organizational stuff to absorb.
Yeah. I think he's just... You know, his numbers in, like, two plus years at AA are worse than Kelnick's were in his half a year.
Yeah, I don't think,
you know, which it would, and as like a 3 year younger player. And I don't mean that as, like, that's a super unfair comparison, because part of the whole thing about Kelnick is there's not many people as good as Jared Kelnick as young, and it's
top,
you know,
five prospect in baseball. Like, he is extremely special. None of this is. The fact that Kelnick is a better option is like saying, I don't know, a five-star dinner is a better option than, you know, the various fast food restaurant. Like, yes, obviously, that's always going to be the case. Like, we're just debating, like, what is a good space filler until Kelnick is ready to go. But I don't think that means that Trammell doesn't have long-term value to the organization, but, you know, he's on his third organization. I am okay with, like, slow playing him a little and letting him get his feet under him.
I agree. There's no rush at all
on
Trammell.
Too.
Like,
23, not old. So give him a year, let him really fully cook as a Mariner. And since we're going to be trading Mitch Haniger at the trade deadline anyway, apparently, according to everyone, we can always just bring him up then.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting to monitor. Like, if Mitch is playing really well, and also the young
happen,
Rugrat
right?
outfielders
but
are playing well, we've got a decision.
Happen, yeah. Right? Mitch Haniger is not going to be a Mariner. Like, that is something I feel pretty sure about. I hate it. I hate it. I'm not saying I like it, but...
Yeah.
Do we
think... I mean, unless you, like, convince him to just be the DH. Like, if he's the DH next to, with the Lewis, Julio, Kelnick outfield, that's not horrible.
Apply some Perry Hill daily on Ty France until he's a third baseman?
That's, I mean, yeah, that's, that would be the other domino, which I don't love.
It's a very large, clunky domino. It is not a laterally domino.
I don't know. I get the idea of trading Haniger, but like at this point, if he is in fact so good that you're like, oh, this could get you something, like, how are you as a team going to be good in the time, like, unless the prospects are absolutely lighting it up and you're thinking like, oh, Trammell looks like the top, you know, 30 prospect he was, and Kelnick's ready and doing great already in the bigs, and Julio's killing it, which is very possible, and Kyle Lewis, you know,
I mean,
looks
you're saying all these things
just
like
as good.
They are possibly not going to happen. All of these things sound like locks to me.
I'm just saying it's a tough sell to trade probably the guy who's going to be your team's best player when you've already pushed back your, you know, contention efforts by at least a year, and you know you're probably not going to be that good this year, but you might be, you know, trying to get people to buy in that, oh yeah, next year though. Like, they already did that last year when they traded Austin Nola, who was like, it's a weird thing to think, but like, he was nearly team's best player, and then maybe was, and like, they traded him and it made sense, it was good, but like, you keep doing that, you know, eventually you do have to have a good 9 major league players, you know, and I don't know how much that pushes them back, because you do usually have to bring guys up, give them some time before they start being as good as they are hoping to be as prospects.
You know. Wow. Altering the entire fabric of Major League Baseball, if true.
It's, you know, I'm really going out there on a limb.
Oh man, I do think like a Mitch Haniger for like a number 2 or number 3 starter makes like so much sense, but I don't know. I know it would break your heart, John, so I don't really want to entertain that until we have to.
I'm preparing for it. I'm like sadder about it now than I was like back in 2018 for some reason when it seemed like a lock. Yeah, I don't know.
And with Fraley is like one of those guys that makes me wish that like baseball teams could trade draft picks. Like, I feel like we could get like a late round pick.
Yeah.
Some team would be like, absolutely. Oh yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
Some team would be like, we would rather have Jake Fraley than our 8th or 10th round pick or whatever. Like, that would make sense for both sides, but alas, Rob Manfred will not allow that to happen.
Mm. Talk about things where baseball needs to improve.
Yeah. Deep sigh. All right, y'all. Thank you for doing this. Thank you to everyone who asked questions. We kept you for long enough, and we are more than willing
to
come back and do this exact thing.
Because we spent 20 minutes talking about bitchin' sauce.
The official sponsor of the Lookout Landing podcast.
You are all
I should probably be careful about that, because we do have like actual ads that are not for bitchin' sauce. So I should probably make sure I'm not like violating any sort of ad problem with Vox.
No one
but
to this part anyway.
That's a really good point. If you did listen this long, go ahead and follow us all on Twitter. I'm at mroberson22. Kate is at Kate Preuser. John is at John Troopin. Follow the account at Lookout Landing and make sure to read every single letter that we put on that site. They're all important.
Yes.
And then I guess the next time we gather, folks, it'll be opening day. We're a week out, aren't we?
Yeah.
Holy
shit.
I know.
Kind of. Season starts in a week plus one day.
It's going to be so much baseball, too. Like, I'm already tired. It's just spring training. I'm like, I've covered now half as many games as I did last year. In the full season, so I don't
holy
know, man.
Wow,
yeah, it was it's true. So I don't.
Well, yeah. Once the season starts, Kate, you deserve to just actually watch the game without having to write anything.
Gonna,
and I can't wait for you to get
I'm
that.
Be the Chris Flexen workhorse of this rotation. Yep.
Okay.
I've been
you can do that too.
Korea. None of you have seen me, but I've been typing tweets in Korean every night. All of them about.
That's huge.
Well, we love that. We definitely will not raise any flags with that, as we are trying to continue getting free stuff from them. And, you know, as well as Werner and local camembert
Werner
companies.
Meat snacks.
Any cheesemongers out there?
Yes. Yeah. Anyway, if you are a purveyor of meat, cheese, crackers, any snack foods,
I would consider beer, beer would be tight.
Consider
Pete Werner's cheese. Peach rings and bitchin' sauce for your next charcuterie board.
Dude, I would so do a charcuterie board that's just gummy snacks. The little sharks, the little peach rings.
We love the little sharks. Haribo now does a collab. Have you guys seen that? Haribo threw all their stuff into one bag. It's called like the snack mix or whatever. It's great.
I've seen it. Yeah, wow. I've seen it. Chaos, but I like it.
Just like this podcast, baby. New tagline. Chaos, but we like it. And we will now press stop recording. But as always, thank you for listening. See you next time. And good friggin' bye.
Okay, if knowledge is the key, then just show me the lock. Got the scrawny legs, but I move just like Lou Brock with speed. I'm agile, plus I'm worth your while. 100% intelligent black child. My opera presentation sizzles the retina. How far must you go to gain respect? Well, it's kind of simple. Just remain your own, or you'll be crazy, sad, and alone. Industry rule number 4080. Record company people are shady. So kids, watch your back, because I think they smoke crack. I don't doubt it. Look at how they act.